time, I'd like to call the special meeting to order. Would you please call the roll?
Sievertson?
Present.
Ward?
Present.
Amelon?
Present.
Bynum?
Present.
Skillings?
Yes, I am.
Coos?
Yes.
Prysunka?
Present.
Otteson? Lynn? Bob Lynn? Carl Hagerman?
Present.
Thank you. One more call for Bob Lynn.
I saw Bob try to dial in and or Sharon, and then he dropped out. So I think he's having connectivity issues.
Okay, we'll stand by for that for just a sec. Aside from SEPA Council and SEPA staff, is there anyone else on the line that would like to identify themselves? No response, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Sharon. So item two is approval of agenda. We have the agenda as it's presented. I don't believe I've heard of any additions, so do I have a motion to approve the agenda as presented?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Move to approve the agenda as presented.
Thank you, Keith. All right, thank you.
I'm sorry, I didn't get the second. Who was that who seconded, Mr. Chair?
It was Cliff.
Cliff, thank you.
Are there any additions or corrections that you see? Hearing, seeing none. Sharon, would you please call the roll?
I will. Amelon?
Yes.
Sievertson?
Yes.
Skillings?
Aye.
Lynn, but if he's not on the line, then Hagerman in his place. Mr. Lynn, are you on the line yet? There you are. Bob, do you have your audio?
On the line.
Bob Lynn, do you have your audio on? I can see him.
Oh, he moved. He's there.
Okay. I need him to...
He isn't working, so Petersburg's not working. Vote is high.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hickerman. Prysunka?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. It moves us on into new business. Item A, consideration and approval of resolution number 2021-075, CEO authorization to pursue financing options related to submarine cable replacement project, and resolution number 2021-076, naming certifier and administrator for the USDA RUS data submittal proposals. There is a motion on page 4. I have a motion to put it on the floor.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move to adopt resolution number 2021-075, granting the Southeast Alaska Power Agency, SEPA, CEO Trey Atkinson the authorization to pursue both Alaska Municipal Bond Bank and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA Rural Utility Service, RUS, electric program financing options on a parallel path, and further move to adopt the Secretary's certificate resolution number 2021-076, naming SEPA CEO Trey Atkinson as a certifier and SEPA's controller, KK, as an administrator on behalf of the SEPA for submittal of any and all, KK, as an administrator on behalf of SEPA for submittal of any and all data required by the USDA RUSRD applied intake system.
Second.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Trey, so what do you have?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome everybody. It's good to see everybody. So we've got just a couple of items here that we're bringing before the board today, and I do have my cover letter that hopefully everyone's had an opportunity to read that kind of outlines specifically the RUS option. We discussed the other options in depth at our last meeting, and at that time I informed the board that I was still pursuing RUS. And with that, you know, I'll say that, and I'll just summarize a little bit on that. The RUS, at least from what you know, all of our research is shown, and comparing it with other lending options, you know, clearly is the lowest cost money we can get. It's, you know, essentially an 8% above the U.S. Treasury Federal Financing Bank. And I've talked to Devin Mitchell, the state debt manager for Alaska, and you know, at Alaska Municipal Bond Bank, and you can't meet these rates. They can come pretty close, but it is just so low that it's compelling to try to make an effort to try and get into their program. I mentioned a number of pros there. You know, one that's, I think, is obvious. The obvious one is the low rate. There's also a little bit additional flexibility for length, the duration. I only ran around a few of those folks, but it looks like their max duration is about 30 years, and that normally bonds are 20 to 25. And you know what that means for the organization, if we're able to pull this off, is that you know, it'll result in lower debt service, and that translates into less of a rate increase over time necessary to support the debt service obligation. So favorable terms, lower debt service obligation. They also, you know, I checked into, they'll finance large capital spares, and you know, we've had discussions on this, particularly the spare submarine cable, so there would be an option to purchase that through RUS with what I know today. You know, and that transfers over into other things. I just put a couple of examples there that we might use that. I think the legal support for RUS is less than the requirement for bond counsel and such to go through the bond bank, and certainly way less than if SEPA goes out to the open market and sells bonds. So that's a favorable item as well, and you can pay off your loan early without penalty. You know, and compare that to our current tax exempt bonds. Our call dates are way out there, and I've had a number of board members reach out to me asking, "Hey, can we refinance these at these lower rates?" And believe me, that was the first question I had: is there any way that we can make that happen? And from what I understand, you know, a bondholder purchases a bond with a guarantee of a certain rate of return. Most bonds have an early call date, but it's usually only a couple of years from the very end of that bond period. And so we run the numbers on it, and you know, you still have to pay most of the interest that's brought forward, and it just doesn't pencil out. So right now I don't see refinancing our existing debt as an option. But on a going forward basis, that is an opportunity that exists, although I think we were, you know, at the bottom of the trough of a long-term decline in bond rates. So some of the cons that go with the RUS, and I'll note, they're pretty significant. The first one is, I can pause for a second if folks have questions on what I've already talked about.
Are there any questions?
Okay, I'll keep rolling, and just feel free to jump in if you've got a question. And so on the cons, you know, the biggest one is it's a difficult program to get into in the essence that there's a lot of work for staff, and Kay and I have been working this issue pretty diligently here for a few weeks now, and we're literally just scratching the surface. And you know, it goes pretty deep. It may even go as deep as changing our full accounting ledger to match the RCA. I mean, RUF, excuse me. And that's pretty significant. You know, there's also some pretty substantial requirements for reporting throughout the process, whether that's a Form 12 or a Form 7, which are two documents typically used by, I'll say, generation entities and distribution entities. So, you know, we'll have to generate additional reports, capture that information on an annual basis, and be able to report up for it. So there'll be a fair amount of work behind the scenes for that. All projects under the RUS require an environmental review, and you can liken that to the NEPA process. And folks that have gone through the NEPA process, depending on the scope of the project, it can be pretty arduous. They also have a SHPO requirement, or they're looking for historical elements on the property. And we would still actually have to perform a SHPO study just on the lot, you know, if we were to build headquarters. So there's a number of requirements that, you know, that are challenging. And, you know, at the end of the day, my opinion is that even though they're pretty large hurdles, and there's obviously a lot of uncertainty at this point in time, I still think it's worthy of pursuing on a parallel path with the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank. One challenge for us is embarking on the RUS effort. You know, we're a little ways along in the submarine cable replacement project. And, you know, I've had discussions with RUS on, you know, are we going to be able to go back and essentially use the financing package to capture some of the earlier milestone payments. And they've indicated that they will take a look at that. And under normal circumstances, we would have already been engaged in the process early on and such. And plus, we already are permitted environmentally for the project. So I think the NEPA environmental review for the submarine cable project will go relatively fast, relatively speaking, with the federal government. But, you know, there's always the risk that gets hung up somewhere. So, and I guess I'll just throw one other caveat on top of all of that is, you know, we have a new administration in Washington, D.C., and RUS is, you know, they're going through some changes and reprioritization on how things are handled. Some of the earlier environmental reviews were outsourced, and portions of that are bringing back into house. So that could, you know, that could impact, and that's part of this uncertainty element that I mentioned on the last bullet in my memo there. So, so I'll pause there, and you know, see if there's some questions the board has, you know, relative to the comments.
Mr. Sheriff, if I could,
go ahead.
Yeah, a couple questions for Trey on this. In that environmental review process that they have, can they put additional restrictions on you above and beyond what normally is done? First question, and then the second part of that is, once you agree to that bond, can they retroactively come back and put additional environmental restrictions on what you're doing that go beyond just the project of which you're bonding for?
So That's somewhat of a complex question. I'll take a go at it. As far as additional restrictions, clearly there will be some additional restrictions on what we've already done. And as an example, I'm not aware that we've performed a SHPO review on the submarine cable replacement project. But I'm pretty sure there was one done when it was originally installed, and we're checking our records to see if we would be able to provide that during the environmental review, so we still wouldn't have to do it. We could just show evidence that there was one done at the beginning of the original project. So it would be things like that that they've got, well, you know, maybe they want to have, you know, their biologists review the marine observation plan. You know, at the end of the day, if they put too many hurdles in front of you on a particular project, you can get financing somewhere else. And that's why, you know, my recommendation is that we continue to run a parallel path with the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank. Now, your question with regarding down the road, that one's a little trickier. My gut tells me that once they've approved the environmental elements and the project is green lit, I don't think they can come back and add things into that. I would be very surprised. So, just looking at it from a common sense approach, well, you know, with all permitting, usually when you get your permitting and it's been established, it's been fully reviewed, and they've issued the okay to construct, you're done. They may put some things in your permit that, you know, we require you to have two mammal observers on site instead of one. I mean, things like that, but I think that'd be written right into the authorization.
I guess my question also goes a bit farther, and that relates to, let's say we go to relicensing. In the relicensing, would that, through the relicensing, would they have a, would this be a way for them to come back and put additional restrictions on you?
You're muted, Drake.
I just don't see that happening, Bob. I can't see that. It would be essentially unrelated, I think. I mean, the project would be completed by then. They're just concerned about disturbing the area for the most part. And this is a previously disturbed area. And it's an established transmission line corridor. You know, where we're simply removing an existing cable and putting a new cable in. So I think once the project is done, I don't think there's going to be impact after that.
Mr. Chair, could I comment?
Go ahead.
You know, the other thing to keep in mind is that this is a programmatic EIS. It's not a project-based EIS. So the review is to determine the environmental impacts from granting a loan to the Southeast Alaska Power Agency. So I know my clients down here that work through RUS who had a cable replacement project much prefer the RUS environmental review than the state of Washington review. So I think it's a bit more streamlined than a standard project EIS is.
Thank you.
So what we're doing here today is just allowing you to continue down a dual path, and at some point in the future, you will make a determination and come back to the board with some recommendations. Is that correct?
That's correct. The resolution number two that was stated, that particular one is a requirement that RUS provided a template, said, hey, we need this from you in order, you know, with these federal agencies, it's a check the box event. Whether you agree with it or whatever, as long as you kind of stay within their boundaries, try to keep the same format on documents that they are used to seeing. You work through the process. You recognize that there's going to be some areas along the way that are going to be a little challenging, but that's just part of the process. So, yes, sir, Mr. Chair. Both options, what I'm proposing now is to continue to pursue these. And I'll say that the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank, I fully apprised them that, you know, we're pursuing RUS, and Devin supports us taking the mutual path. And he's perfectly fine at the last minute that when we get ready to make the final decision, if we select one or the other, he's fine with that. So. I think it just covers all of our bases, because right now we're so early in the process with RUS that, you know, we just don't know enough about it quite yet, and we're trying to find out as much as we possibly can. I have a meeting set up with their environmental review lead tomorrow to learn more about that process, and, you know, so we're expediting as fast as we can, but it's a process, and it's going to take a few months to get through.
All right, thank you, Bob.
All right,
thank you
for that.
People mute their phones and stuff, and maybe we'll get rid of some of that feedback. Yes.
Hello. You okay, Bob? Me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, I realize I can't vote on this, but for some reason or other, I got a bad feeling in my gut about dealing with the federal government. I know what Trey's saying probably makes sense, but I'm worried in the long run, even though this is cheap, and sometimes cheap isn't better or best, I'm concerned about that stack of information on there and the things that could happen. And so, well, I guess with that being said, my only other question is, as we move forward in parallel, what's the cost in time and money for staff to chase these guys? And like I say, they probably are right, but something tells me don't deal with the federal government. And so that's all I've got to say.
I appreciate that, Dick. Trey, do you have an answer to that?
So, I'll say that, you know, since we haven't gone through the process yet, you know, I can't say how much it's going to cost completely, especially on staff time. I know it's going to take staff time. We reached out, Joel connected me with somebody that's familiar with the legal aspects of RUS borrowing, and would support the RUS legal elements, I'll say similar to a bond attorney that we would hire to help us to go through Alaska Municipal Bond Bank. But I will say the support for the RUS on the legal element is less expensive. Because there's just less to it, I think. And Joel, do you want to comment on that before I move on at all?
Sure. You know, I appreciate your sentiments there, Dick, because typically you don't want to, it's just a lot of red tape with the federal government on a program like this, but the rates are so low. It's real. There's 900 plus co-ops around the country that are pretty much, probably 700 of them are borrowers through the Rural Utility Service. So there's all different kinds of utilities that use it. And on the legal side, it is way more streamlined. It's just pretty much like a bank loan. And I do a lot of this type of ongoing work for clients, but I've never done an initial borrowing, so there's a lot of elements to it. And the person I spoke to is someone I know and trust and has done it a lot. And she, you know, we already were able to kind of compare apples to apples here on the bond side. And they've already come in way less on the legal side. So it's nice to have someone there who can hold our hand through the process. But it will take more initially. I mean, my sense is, just from my experience, is that the initial work will be more, and it'll be more on Kay and Trey and everybody else to help us get there. But once you're in the door, it's pretty streamlined after that. I mean, it's really simple to, you know, it's like a construction loan, essentially. And the process is simple once you get set up to do it. But there'll be ramp up time for sure.
Thank you, Joel. So I think we probably should move forward with the continuing down the dual path. If things become too arduous or problematic, I'm sure Trey will get back with us and let us know that. But at the end of this, we would hope that we'd have a side-by-side comparison and be able to make a value decision on where best to get the money. So we do have a motion in front of us today to give Trey authorization to pursue that. Are there any more questions in regards to the motion?
Mr. Chair, I've got one point of clarity that I'd just like to ask the board about. And it goes with this process. Some folks have asked the question with regard to how long of a duration the financing would cover. And from what I can gather from the application process, that's an element that I have to specify early on in the process, in the application. And I put some comments in my memo that, you know, I think money's very cheap right now, and the amount and the duration of the lending that we're requesting, I think we should go for the longest term possible, because it better aligns with the life of the asset. And, you know, from a cost causer, cost payer perspective, it'll stretch it out over a longer period of time, and it'll be less of an impact to rates. And it leaves us more room in the future for going and getting additional financing. So right now, the RUS, I can get up to 30 years. And when I got an initial email from the municipal bond bank, Devin indicated he's quoted me both for a 20 and a 25 year. And so I just need a little direction from the board as well on that. If they're in agreement with me to try to pursue the longest term possible on both of these pathways. And then also, my recommendation at this time is that, you know, I pursue these for the full amount of the cost of the project. And I'm happy to answer any questions on those elements right now.
Trey, what were the green signs?
That you, Cliff?
Must be mine.
All right, go ahead, Cliff.
What were the rates we were looking at on the municipal bond bank versus the RUS?
You're muted, Trey.
Thank you. So the municipal bond bank numbers that I received are from February 23rd. And the 20-year for that, um, was 2.23. And the 25-year was higher than that. Now recognize that bonds have increased 30 to 40 basis points in the last month. Contrast that to the RUS on the 30-year, which would be even higher if you could get it through the MBB. Last week, that was at 2.205. So we're going to have a lower rate that will result in literally hundreds of thousands of dollars of savings in interest over the life of the loan. If we go longer and go for the cheaper, and we're able to get the RUS financing.
So I'd expect that when you think about this, you would come back with a comparison.
Yes. Well, we'll come back and say, well, this is the absolute, this is what it would cost you in the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank, presumably at the 25-year duration, and then for the RUS, presumably at the 30, for the full amount of the loan.
So first of all, we're longer term loan. Are we all okay with that?
Mr. Chair, I had a question.
Yes.
This is directed to Trey. Trey, have we looked at holding this debt out for 20 years versus 30 years, 2025 versus 30 years, and how that will impact other outlying capital?
So I've considered that, and so right now, my focus initially here was, the board's objective was to minimize rate increases. And by lengthening that duration out, it minimizes potential rate increases necessary to meet debt service obligations. As far as moving it out longer, that also lowers the annual debt service ceiling down, and it provides more bandwidth above that to layer additional debt on top of it. So at this time, I don't see a problem, and I think it's advantageous to go out further. And also, I'll note that, you know, I mean, there's an opportunity to pay off the RUS earlier, but not the tax exempt bonds typically.
I'm one of the people that had the problem with going out with a longer term. I'm still got concerns about that, but in looking at our current bonding, and I believe we have one bond to be paid off in 24 that possibly could then be turned to do this, so into paying part of this off. So the 30 years might be all right, provided we don't have, I would like not to see us have, you know, huge debts out there in the future. I guess 30 years would be all right from my perspective, now that I've studied this quite a bit.
So for agreement, go ahead, Jeremy.
One other quick question is, the payoff early, is there a requirement that would be done at a specific time in the future, or could we, if SEPA the board decides at a future time to increase payments to get this paid off early, is that acceptable under these terms?
And I'm assuming you're talking the RUS, Jeremy?
Yes.
So my understanding, you can pay it off anytime you want without penalty, or pay it down faster if you want. I mean, typically people, especially with money as cheap as it is, I mean, fast forward out there 10 years from now, interest rates might be up at 5 or 6%. We're going to go, wow, I'm glad we got that. You know, interest rates are going up. They're not going down. So, yeah.
Thank you.
And if there's, you know, as we get deeper and deeper into this RUS process, you know, we're going to find out more, and certainly if there's some substantive change, you know, that will be presented to the board, and so you can make a decision.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, go right ahead.
Thank you. I have no issue any longer. I agree with, I don't know why it's feedbacking so bad. I don't think it's on my end. I'm not sure what's happening there. I have no problem with the longer term. I'm with Trey on this, that when money is so inexpensive, that if we can build reserves and hold reserves and receive some type of return on the reserve, you're offsetting it even further. So I'm not quite sure, unless we have a project that we have to bond for that we're unable to, you know, our bond, we're too high, but I'm completely comfortable with the longer terms. I'm also very comfortable with the parallel track. I know the feds are difficult to deal with, but if the program saves us money, we should take advantage of that. So that's all I'm saying.
Thank you, Steve. So the general consensus is the term is okay. So the other part of that comment was, do we bond for the full amount of the project? And I think that would be inappropriate with the cost, with the money cost us at this point in time. So are there any objections or comments about that? Hearing, seeing none, then I would ask Sharon to call the roll on this motion.
Well, Prysanka?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
Sievertson?
Yes.
Skillings?
Yes.
Lynn? Bob Lynn? Mr. Hagerman, are you on audio?
I am.
Okay.
Yes, I am. Petersburg vote is yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That brings us to item B, consideration and approval of sole source contract regarding STCS HMI historian upgrade R&R capital project number 19331. There is a motion in regards to that on page 12. We have a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move to authorize staff to enter into a sole source contract with Segrity LLC for programming, engineering, testing, and commissioning services for CEPA's STCS HMI Historian Modernization Project RR19331 for $79,200 plus a 10% contingency of $7,920 for a total not to exceed value of $87,120.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you very much, Trey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think you know, this is Robert's project, and if you don't mind, I'll ask him to elaborate on the details of this and field questions, and then I can circle in at the end if need be.
Thank you very much, Robert.
So this project's been going on. Obviously, it's a 19 RR project, and got on the screen here. Can everybody see this chart here? That's the network design.
Yep. Yep, we have it.
Okay, so we've built out the satellite mesh at this point. We've got that completed. So now our data for our SCADA is being routed from Tai to Swan to the office here without having to hit the World Wide Web. So that was a huge security increase and reliability project. That's complete. Part of that upgrade was also getting Tai Lake. We had Swan Lake phone systems going over the partial mesh network from since last year, and now we completed the Tai phone network over the mesh. And what that has done is effectively added a phone system back to Tai, whereas in November, early December of 2020, we ended up losing our microwave link, and so we rushed to try and gain phone systems and communications back with Tai. So we were able to do that over the satellite mesh. The next part of that whole thing is to do the fiber mesh, to where right now Petersburg substation, Wrangell substation, and Wrangell switchyard they're all being routed currently just over the internet, and we're using a virtual VPN connection. It's an encrypted connection, but even still, it's still going over the internet, although it's encrypted. The fiber mesh network that's being built out right now, which is approved by the board, will take those connections off of the internet, off of the World Wide Web, regardless of being encrypted, and put them on a dedicated SIPA fiber backbone. So that is the final straw that we needed to start to implement the HMI part of this project. As you recall, this is the STICS HMI modernization project. We completed the STICS portion of this project in FY, started in 19 and completed in 20, and we're moving into the actual integration of the HMI screens. To start that, it makes sense to do it at the SIPA office first, get that system completely built out, and then once it's proofed in the office, there's no downtime required to implement it at TIE and SWAN. So we went out for a rough order of magnitude in 2019, and it was part of how we developed the R&R budget. And we were getting, rough order of magnitude, $400,000, $450,000. And that didn't include sticks. It also didn't include a lot of the changes that we've seen as we've gone through this project, like the dam raise HMI system, the bubbler system we're adding, the snow pillows and the lake level sensors, stuff like that. As we're moving throughout this project, additional items have been added. So Sagerty has been doing a lot of the work under our SCADA contract to address those smaller issues as they arose, like, hey, we needed a new screen for the dam raise project. Also, Sagerty was involved in the original SCADA system. So it makes sense from a cost perspective to utilize them for this project, A, and B, it makes sense from a security perspective. With all this work that we put in to try and secure our network, when we go out for proposals, if we were to go out and bid this, and this is under $100,000, so it's really on the multiple quote type basis, but if we were to go out and bid the entire project and say, here's a scope of work, and we get a fixed firm price, I would firmly believe that we would already been into contract modifications and increase in cost. But A and B, looking at it from a security perspective, we would have to give them all our IP addresses for all our devices. We would have to give them all our networks and routing, all our passwords to all of our SCADA PLCs. And so opening ourselves up, even though we say, hey, sign on the dotted line, you won't do anything, we open ourselves up a little bit more to security risk. So it makes sense to me to sole source this to Sagerty, who already has all that information, who has already been intimately involved with this, not necessarily this project, but the entire SCADA network, and get this system built in the office here. And then once we're ready to deploy it at the sites, TIE and Swan Lake, by then we may very well have our SCADA technician on board, and he can possibly do that work. But in the meantime, we can build that backbone here in the office. So that's the intent of it. It's an hours only. Sagerty typically invoices on by the hour what they did for that hour. So it's a time and materials, although materials are not required for this phase. It's all labor. But that's the intent of this sole source.
Thank you for that, Robert. I know this is a project that's been in works, and it'd be nice to get it to fruition. So are there any questions from the board in regards to this project? Hearing and seeing none, Sharon, would you please call the roll?
I will. Lynn? Mr. Lynn? Mr. Haber? Mr. Hagerman, can you speak for Petersburg?
Yes, I can. It's a yay from Petersburg.
Thank you. Prysanka?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
Sievertson?
Yes.
And Skillings?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. That passes. Moves to item C, consideration and approval of sole source contract regarding architectural services. And I believe that is on page 13. Do I have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move to authorize staff to enter into a sole source contract with Welsh Whiteley Architects LLC for design, bidding, construction, phase services for SEPA's office and warehouse headquarters, RR 19326, for $193,662 plus a 10% contingency of $19,369 for a total not to exceed value of
$213,061. Thank you, Bob. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Carl. Been moved and seconded. Trey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is an update on the SEPA headquarters building that was approved in this year's budget. And Robert's just pulled up a schematic that isn't in the board packet. It's just a footprint that shows where the parking elements and the orientation for Tongass Ave and Don Finley Lane are. I thought that might be helpful for the board for visualizing that a little bit better. As you can see, you know, we're trying to put an office and parking on a relatively small lots, two combined lots. And you can see the center line going right through the building there. I believe that's a lot line that would be eliminated and joined together. So, you know, I'm really pleased where we're at in the design process right now. We spent a lot of time hashing out little details and working with Welsh Whiteley on this initial conceptual level drawing and it actually put some pretty good detail in it, you know, and now we're ready to move on to the next phase that's required to move toward bidding and construction. So as you can see in the packet, you know, basic design of the building, a layout that that Robert was just showing on the upper level there is where the mostly all the offices are contained. And a central greeting area. Yeah, just pretty much the bare bones. Got a conference room, combination library, and IT room to handle all of our IT items. If anybody's ever been here to the headquarters building here, we have a room in the back that's full of stuff. And that'll also include like a workbench for folks to, so we can move those things off of the tech table back there and keep them out of the work area. And so pretty straightforward. You know, trying to put a couple of minor design elements. And Robert, we slide back up to the first floor plan. I'll just talk on that just for a second. Thank you. And this is the bottom level, entry level. Very simple, you know, we have board meetings. People walk straight in and walk straight through into the boardroom. So you don't have people wandering around the building. Also, there's a warehouse combination shop area on the main level as well. Simple, you know, restrooms and a couple of small mechanical and office space areas and then a kitchen bed off the boardroom to support board meetings. And so anyway, you know, I'd like to pause here just for a second, and if Ed's on the phone, give him an opportunity to talk about the plan. He's worked real hard to get it where it's at as well. And Ed, are you available?
Yeah, thanks, Trey. Yeah, I think Trey's covered it well. What I would elaborate on is I think it's to our benefit to use a architect that, one, has been involved with this since the beginning of the concept drawing. So he's been working on this nearly a year now, back and forth with us. He understands SEPA's style and philosophy. We're in line with each other. He understands the level of aesthetics that we want in the building, the usefulness. So somersault for line hunting. Also, this will be the project with FEMA that I've done with them. So like I said, we work well together. So, and it's a PNM. When you work well with the architect or any professional service, you realize that there's not a lot of rework and redoes in it. You're both on the same page one time, put it out, and then likely we'll be coordinating with the civil, mechanical, and electrical as well to keep that continuity going with the design of the facility. At that point, just leave it open for questions.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Yes, go ahead.
Now, obviously, I'm not an architect, and I don't want to be critical per se, but I do have a comment here that we're in the design stages of building a brand new building, and this building seems to hold true to a lot of Ketchikan's architecture, and that is that parking lots and building views are being that are on the water side are being occupied with other things like stairwells. And so I was just curious on maybe what the thought process behind occupying half of the building's viewable space to the water is entryways and non-usable office space and or conference rooms.
Try to respond to that. If you see that atrium entryway is all glass, so we were trying to address that issue. It just kind of makes sense to have to a public building to have the access where the public can see it. And then in order to get the view back and everything, we decided to make that a clear story entrance surround. And then the entrance into the building is on the downwind side. So that's to the north, so that the prevailing winds are hitting on the opposite side. And then parking, why the primary parking's in the front. There will also need to be overflow parking in the back laydown area to meet the permitting requirements.
Thank you, Ed.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Ed, just a comment. On the second floor, on the When I looked at it, my first reaction was, is that where we have the bathrooms put back here in the corner, it looks to me like we're always gone past that, the administrator, the clerk, and the other folks. They're kind of stuck way back in the corner. I was wondering if there was a way to reconfigure that slightly, that it'd be more accessible to everybody rather than to have to disrupt, you know, a couple people there. But that's just a comment. I don't have any argument one way or another.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah, we come up with like three different concepts of where those bathrooms have resided over the process of putting this concept together. Initially, if you see where the break room and janitor closet was, that was the bathroom. We've had it in the center. We've had it in order to get the square footage and the IT room and the library and stuff that we needed, the least amount of wasted space pushed these to the back. And I agree with you, Bob. That's been in other projects I've been involved in, the Borough Building being one of them, is there's been not complaints, but concerns based on people end up being the bathroom hall monitor, would you say, and didn't care for that design. But in order to move them around, we ended up losing space elsewhere. But it's something that we can still address as we move forward.
Thank you, Ed.
Thanks, Ed. I'm like you. I've looked at and been involved with designs of, and that's the only thing I saw in there that, you know, would cause me a little bit of concern, but you guys have the decision there.
Yeah, I think as we move a little farther in this, we start getting the mechanicals put together and we really figure out what the square footages of the rooms are, those could be moved and accommodate other needs. This is not locked in stone by any stretch yet.
Mr. Chair? Anybody else?
Yeah, I got one.
Go ahead.
Hey, Ed, really quick, was there, I thought originally we talked about possibly leaving an option open to put additional warehouse buildings on the site by putting the office in the, directly in the middle of both pieces of property. Does that eliminate any future development for having, say, covered storage for boats or vehicles or additional work laydown space?
Well, due to the combined space and really what triggers the number of parking spaces is that conference room downstairs. That's a large space and going to require, I don't know exactly yet, we haven't started down the permitting, but a number of spaces are going to be required because of that conference area to meet that need. And it utilized way more of our real estate than originally anticipated.
Okay. One other quick question.
Sir, I would say that in the future, if we have to build an additional, and the way this was designed is that downstairs warehouse could be converted into additional offices as needed. And you may need another warehouse in the future. That may be that it makes more sense to locate that on less costly per square foot land.
Mr. Chair,
thank you.
Quick question.
Yes, go ahead.
Ed, what is the sizing of these parking spaces that we're using here? Are these aren't White Cliff sized parking spaces, are they?
No, I'll tell you personal, we working with that project, those are a special exemption of the code because they couldn't get the number of required parking places in there, so they downsized them for that particular project, but now we intend to make them to meet code.
I just know that when the city was looking at the parking lot over by the Tongass there, trading company, there's lots of different options on minimum size parking spots versus a little bit larger spots that fit pickups and things like that. And it obviously cut down on parking, and I just wasn't sure what our plan was here.
So, you know, thinking on that terms, the parking lot like in the front of the building that's going to be utilized almost entirely by staff and handicap and maybe a couple of customer open spots, you would want those to be full size just for the convenience of getting in and out of them and not having your doors beat up. But the additional overflow parking to meet the code requirements that we have to lay out behind, that could be downsized to minimize the land usage.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, just one follow-up comment to Cliff's question. Cliff, I don't know if you caught it when Robert kind of drew that L shape in on the screen there. That was our original footprint design, and you know, if we did need the lower level where the warehouse is at to convert to additional office spaces or expansion of some sort, we could potentially take those two doors off, extend into that L shape, and, you know, reposition the doors in a different location. It's not ideal. You know, we just have a really small area to work within. And if you recall, that was the original design, and it just was too expensive at the time. I couldn't justify spending that much money on a building. So as a cost-cutting measure, we eliminated that portion.
Perfect. Thanks, Trey.
Thank you. I know this is still early on in the state, and so we haven't come up with the mechanical yet, whether we're doing electric heat or whatever the heat sources are, heat pumps, whatever that may look like. So I'm looking forward to seeing what that may be like. I would suggest that there be some kind of a automated blind system for that atrium, because if any of you have ever gone into the Daily News in the middle of the day, it's like an oven in there. And so you're going to have our front desk person sitting in a sauna for most of the day if we don't do something to contain some of that heat issues that may come up. So just keep that in mind as we move forward. They make all kinds of interesting things now to help with that. So. It looks good. So the motion today is to continue on with Welsh Whiteley for the cost that's been stated. Is there any other comments about continuing forward? Hearing and seeing none, Sharon, would you please call the roll?
I will. Skillings?
Yes.
Lynn?
Yes.
Prysanka?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
Sievertson?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. So that's going to move us on to the next agenda item, which is the executive session. And I have a substitute motion for that, if you would allow. So the executive session during the special board meeting is to discuss some sourcing and contracting for hydrofield investigations and development site definition documents and hydrosite investigation aerial mapping. So I would move to recess into executive session to conduct pursuant to the CEPA's bylaws consistent with the Alaska Statute 44.62.310 for discussions to consider sole source contracting for hydrosite field investigation, develop site definition documents and aerial mapping and potential hydrosites, as the discussion will include matters the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of the public agency. Do we have a second?
Second. Prysanka.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing, seeing none.
Can you give us 10 minutes or at least 5 to 10 minutes, Bob, so we can... I gotta convert the recording. It takes much time.
Yeah, we have to have a motion first and a vote in order to move in. So if there's no other discussion, Sharon, would you please call the roll?
I will. Sievertson?
Yes.
Skillings? Mr. Skillings?
Yes. Putting my mute off.
No problem. Lynn?
Yes.
Prysanka?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
Thank you.
So the time right now is 4:03. We'll be back in at 4:10. Does that give you enough time, Robert?
Yep, that should be enough. Thanks, Mom.
All right, so executive session 4:10.
Need the remote facilities.
Okay, we're up and rolling. Sievertson.
Yes, I'm here.
Ward. Amelon.
Present.
Bynum?
Present.
Skillings?
Yes.
Coos?
Here.
Prysanka?
Present.
Mr. Otteson? Lynn?
Yes.
Hagerman?
Here.
And do we have CEPA Council and Mr. Acteson on the line?
This is Trey. I'm on the line.
Okay. Joel, are you on?
Yes, Joel's signaling.
He's yes,
on.
Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm on. Couldn't get to my mute button. Thanks, Sharon.
No problem. I believe the rest of the staff were, I don't know that they, Robert, you're present, and did we need any other staff for this portion of the meeting, Trey, or are
no,
you good?
I think we're good. Thank you, Sharon.
All right, you're welcome.
So that we met in executive session, we had discussions, we've come back to regular session. We do have two motions. The first one is in regards to a request for a sole source related to hydrosite, tidal power site definition documents. Do I have a motion, please?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move to authorize staff to enter into a sole source contract with McMillan LLC, develop new site definition documents for conducting hydrosite investigation at a new potential hydropower site for $129,484 plus a 20% contingency of $25,896 for the total not to exceed value of $155,380.
Do I have a second?
Second.
It has been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing, seeing none. Sharon, would you please call the roll?
Amelon?
Yes.
Sievertson?
Yes.
Skillings?
Yes.
Lynn?
Yes.
Prysanka?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That motion passes. Brings us to the second motion, which is a request for a sole source contract regarding aerial mapping. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I move to authorize staff to enter into a sole source contract with Quantum Spatial Inc. for LIDAR and digital imagery for Seabrand's hydrosite investigations for the lump sum value of $92,266 plus a 20% contingency of $18,453 for weather, ground transportation, or other factors for the total not to exceed value of $110,719.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
It has been moved and seconded. Is there any further discussion? Hearing, seeing none, Sharon, would you please call the roll?
Prysanka?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
Sievertson?
Yes.
Skillings?
Yes.
And Lynn?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think that concludes the regular business for the day. Is there any board members that have any closing comments? Well, I thank you for your participation. Good meeting. And with that, I'll entertain a motion for adjournment.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
It has been moved and seconded. Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, the chair will rule that we stand adjourned. Thank you.